Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
This Wednesday is a heck of a Monday, isn't it? Hey, everyone. I am Molly.
I am Kai, and this is a mini episode, I believe we're calling it, of our brand new podcast. It's called Make Me Smart. Launches in January after the inauguration of one Donald J. Trump as president of the United States, about which we're going to discuss a little bit today, aren't we?
We are going to talk about that today. And I know that that will come as no surprise to you, you dear listener. It's time for the news fix.
So tell you what, I'm going to read you a list of names. You're going to tell me what they all have in common. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tim Cook, Satya Nadella, Jeff Bezos, Sheryl Sandberg, Brian Krzanich, and Ginni Rometty. Go.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on who you're reading on the internet. You could either say collaborators or CEOs.
Oh, man. Really? Wow. You're going right into it.
I'm just saying that the rhetoric about this meeting. So these are all CEOs of large technology companies who have been invited to Trump Tower.
As we talk, you know, it's interesting. So there's a great picture on Twitter that I saw right before I came in. Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon and also the owner of The Washington Post, which, by the way, is going to close out 2016 in the black. The Post made money, which is a whole different thing. But anyway, it's Bezos in an elevator, and in the reflection of the elevator wall behind him, you can see 11,000 cameras taking a picture of this poor bastard Jeff Bezos sitting in an elevator waiting to go see Donald Trump. And the caption on it is, Bezos was summoned 2 days ago, showed up today.
Was summoned.
Right?
Ouch. Yeah. I mean, I consider this information gathering on the part of these CEOs. I really do. I think, yes, on the one hand, they were summoned, but nobody knows what the Trump administration has planned for the tech industry specifically. This has been so absent. And it's startling because it's such a huge element of the economy. It involves so many things that are important to our day-to-day lives. Like the tech industry is kind of a big deal. And there's been very little specific policy about it to date. And so I got to figure that at least half of what's happening here is just pure curiosity.
You know, so this might be controversial, but there's a little piece of me that wishes they had just said, we're not coming.
Really?
We're not coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they have been on the outs. Tech and Donald Trump have for the past, you know, when he started getting taken seriously in the campaign 18 months ago, which is to say he was leading from the start. he has said not nice things about very specific companies and people who are going to be in this room. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's fascinating.
I mean, I feel like the Jeff Bezos interaction alone is going to be an absolute buffet of awkwardness, considering not only the sort of public choose your dish. Is it the Washington Post ownership or is it the threats to investigate Amazon for antitrust and monopoly behavior? You know, it could be anything.
What do you think, though, of the idea that they shouldn't have gone?
You know, it's funny. I feel like I'm still trying to come around on that one. So I think it is very interesting that the two CEOs who have declined due to their international travels are the CEOs of private companies, companies that have not yet gone public, right? Uber and Airbnb. I think it would be very difficult as a CEO of a publicly traded company to justify not going on philosophical grounds. I think that's really difficult. And it makes a massive statement about what you think about this administration that these people maybe don't feel like it is in their business.
Yeah.
They maybe don't feel like it's their responsibility to make.
So it's, I have a fiduciary duty to go meet at Trump Tower. That's the deal.
Absolutely. They run gigantic businesses. They need to know what the future holds for them.
Yeah.
I just feel like as a purely information gathering trip, it would be irresponsible not to go.
Yeah. There is another character in this drama that I want to talk about for a minute because it has been so much on my mind. It is, in a metaphorical sense, the lobby of that building with its gold trim and its ever-present media pool. And yesterday morning-ish, it was also Mr. Trump and Kanye West stepping out of the elevator from the like the 36th floor or whatever it was and standing in front of the cameras. It was, in my considered opinion, yet another exercise of what I am coming to call the Trump distraction technique. That is to say, there is news out there that he wants to avert people's eyes from, it seems. For example, Rex Tillerson, the nomination for Secretary of State, and his problematical, possibly, dealings with Russia. Or the idea that he's not going to have a press conference, as he said, about when he's going to step away from his business. That was all breaking on, I guess it was, what, Monday night, early Tuesday morning. And then Tuesday mid-morning, Kanye shows up and everybody, which is to say Twitter and cable news, goes, oh, my God, Kanye's in the lobby. Kanye's in the lobby. And the not great news about Donald Trump gets drowned out. And I just I find it so interesting and a thing that media ought to be watchful about. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so, too. If we could make a pledge, wouldn't it be to just ignore Kanye? Could it be to just ignore Kanye? Because it also, because I have to say, it was also the morning that that 25,000-word Newsweek piece came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. You were telling me about this yesterday, yeah, which I have not read,
I'm
by the way. I'm
obsessed with this story.
By Kurt, what's his name? Eichenwald.
Kurt Eichenwald, yeah. It's, I mean, it's at least a 30-minute read. It's phenomenally long.
Who has that kind of time to read 30 minutes worth of stuff?
It turns out it takes a BART ride. That's the way to do it. It's all about the subway because otherwise it never would have happened.
Please let my train be late. Please let my train be late.
Somebody needs to make like the Cliff's Notes version of this article because I feel like somehow it did not get the attention that I expected it to because it is so detailed in terms of the very, very specific conflicts of interest that are raised by the relationships with the Philippines, the relationships in China, the relationships in Taiwan. It talks very specifically about the leverage that some of these countries and leaders have over Donald Trump because they have a specific ability to kill or allow multi-million-dollar hotel projects. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's amazing. And indeed, all there was Kanye.
And that's not the first time, right? I mean, you had the Boeing tweets had the Hamilton tweets and you had the – I mean, it's all just of a piece. And yet the media, by which I mean, again, you know, sort of political Twitter and cable news goes, oh, look over there, squirrel, you know? And you're like, no, man, come on.
You almost start to get this – like the level of the distraction almost starts to suggest the seriousness of the news on the other side. Like I feel like you don't pull out Kanye – that's like an A-bomb level distraction.
If there's really bad stuff, break Kanye in really case of glass. Stuff, or so that, break Kanye glass in case of emergency, right?
Yeah. Kind of. Like, that makes me want to look a little deeper at the Rex Tillerson story or, you know, read the Newsweek article again because I'm thinking, man, that's a high level distraction
totally
right
true.
There.
Totally true.
And it should be our job now for the rest of the week to find out exactly why and how bad the stuff is on the other side.
Make me smart.
Make me smart.
Hey, make me smart.
So let's talk a little bit about what you want to know. We're still starting this conversation. So in last week's mini episode, we read a question from a listener about HSAs. Apparently, no experts out there had the answer to that question.
No, come on. You got to help us out. It's healthcare policy.
We got another question. Jim Snell wanted to know how many foreclosed properties the nation has and do we need more housing starts? You guys are like so economically smart already.
It's crazy.
Do we need more housing starts as in... what is housing starts?
Well, so housing starts is a number that comes out every month, and it just talks about literally breaking ground on new houses and apartment buildings. And so the answer is we probably don't need more housing starts right now because, and this gets to the first part of the question, millions of foreclosed homes in this economy.
Wow,
there are millions and millions and millions of them. So RealtyTrack is a company that does a survey, and I'm sure there are real estate policy experts out there. But they do a survey every year. In fact, they do it monthly and then an annual total. And according to RealtyTrack, 2015, the last year for which they have data, was the lowest number of properties with foreclosure filings since 2006. Mm. However, there were still a million homes foreclosed on last year.
Wow.
Which is a lot. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. I have to figure, I'm going to take us in a mild tangent, but I have to figure that part of the reason for the ongoing economic insecurity that we constantly talk about is housing. And I say that I'm obsessed with all housing stories. And I say that partly because I live in the Bay Area where I feel insecure about housing all the time. And I have to imagine that that's a huge part of why people still feel insecure, even if they make what should be enough money. Because if you can't trust that you can afford somewhere to live, then you get to like a Maslow's triangle level of insecurity. And it doesn't really matter if unemployment is low because you're just like, yeah, but can I, if I get evicted, like if my landlord sell my house, how screwed am I?
Yeah. No, we. I mean, we just had a story about this on the air the other day about how rents are rising faster than wages and thus eviction, rental evictions are up, which is, I mean, it's terrible. It's absolutely horrible.
It happened to me 18 months ago, actually.
You got evicted?
Well, my landlord sold my house,
Wow.
And I had to move. And my rent doubled.
Oh, man.
It doubled. And I have been feeling it ever since.
I bet.
But that's why I find those stories so compelling, because I do think that that's happening everywhere, even in places that are otherwise economically depressed. The housing prices are still high, and it's just brutal.
Well, I've told you about my brother, and I mentioned this yesterday when I was up in San Francisco, right? I mean, he bought a loft 10 years ago for $400 and change, sold it for a million plus, and moved to Portland. He's like, I can't deal with this stuff anymore, man. I'm out of here.
I did hear some good news, actually, as I was renegotiating my lease.
What's that?
You guys are learning way too much about me right now.
I know. Sorry. And I apologize to my brother, too, but whatever.
Oakland rents in the Bay Area are actually declining, and Oakland rents in particular down between 11% and 6%. And that's super notable because Oakland rents particularly have been the fastest rising in the country for the last year.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe. And I think it's the same phenomenon. People are just like, they're not coming to Oakland. They're not coming to San Francisco. They're just saying like, I'm out.
It's too hard.
I can't do it anymore.
It's too hard. I mentioned San Francisco yesterday. We are going to put up on our website some pictures that got taken of me and Molly yesterday. Holy cow, are they great pictures. It includes, and I will record somebody's voicemail if you can guess which one. It includes the favorite picture of me taken ever.
You know what? I have to say, I haven't seen every picture of you taken ever, but like, I agree.
Yeah.
I disagree on principle because it's so good.
I should say here, and I'm saying it actually because our producer Jenny whispered in my ear, who took them? A very good friend of this program by the name of Chris Michael, who's a great guy, lives up in San Francisco, awesome photographer. Check him out. They're really great. And he's a good guy, and he hooked us up. And we had a lot of coffee, but that's a whole different story.
So much coffee.
So
I cleaned
coffee.
The whole house. We will post. I have already posted some of those photos on my Facebook, facebook.com/Mollywood. I assume Kai will shortly be posting some on
his. I will now, yes. Thank you for the shame. Yes, I appreciate that.
Facebook.com/Kai Rizdahl. If you have more questions for us or comments or you want to ask questions about the photo shoot, makemesmart@marketplace.org is our email address. You can get more information about the show, including the RSS feed, if you want to plug that into your podcast listener, catcher at marketplace.org/podcasts. And,
yes, what?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, what you're going to say, say it.
Here's what I'm going to say. If you're on iTunes, hit us up with a review, would you? Because that, it all matters. Like us, subscribe to us, and review us. But be kind.
I feel like I want to do like my son does now when he's pretending to make YouTube videos about everything all the time and go, smash the like button, you guys. Smash the like button.
Wow.
Marketplace.org/makemesmart for more information on our show.
We got to go.
Talk to you soon. Smash the like button.
Smash the like button.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.